At the 2013 Commodity Classic, I am visiting with Terry Kastens from Kansas State University. First of all, Terry, tell me a little bit about what you do.
I'm actually a farmer now because I'm retired from the university. I was an ag economist at Kansas State for 15 years, farmed for 20 years first, then went back to school and was a professor there for 15 years, and now I'm back on the farm in northwestern Kansas.
Well, you were part of a Learning Center session here talking about technology and the return on investments. Very important to any farmer out there. When you've got to make an investment, you hope to get something back. What are a couple of things you really wanted these folks to take away from that?
First of all, I want to say that every new technology requires an investment. There is a fixed cost component. And what that means is that larger farms have an opportunity to better benefit from that technology because they can afford the investment because they can spread it over more units of production, more acres, more bushels, whatever. So there's an intrinsic advantage to larger farms in technology adoption.
Kind of the economy of scale, sort of.
Yeah, most definitely. It's an economy of size issue. Larger farms are going to adopt technologies more quickly than our smaller farms.
Now, one of the points that I heard brought up early was the idea that this is going to lead to consolidation, maybe at a faster pace in the row crop area, kind of analogous to what we've seen in the livestock industry.
Yes, absolutely. When we think of some of the technologies that affected hog production and dairy production, for example, and how fast they changed the consolidation picture, that's the same thing that's going to take place in crop production in our estimation. Some of these new technologies are such that farms are going to benefit from being really large really quickly, and we expect to see consolidation, probably not quite as fast as the livestock sectors, but nearly so.
Now, one of the concepts that I also heard was the idea that you have some technology that's adopted rapidly, some at a much slower pace. And you got some examples of each of those. When it comes to looking, especially this what we call precision ag area and technology, what do you see as some of the things being adopted real quick versus much more slowly?
Well, some examples are on the precision ag side of things would be yield monitors are very quickly adopted. But making sense out of the yield monitors and actually varying the rate of, say, fertilizer based on them, that's a lot slower. It takes a lot more intelligence, a lot more thought, a lot more analysis to pull that off. That's the slower aspect of adoption of that particular precision ag technology. So some precision ag technologies, a lot of them associated with machine control, are very quickly adopted. The ones that require changing inputs, those kinds of things are going to be much slower adopted.
It was surprising to me, and I think you had some USDA data on this, the percentage of farmers actually using auto guidance, for example.
Yeah, well, actually, already in 2010, we had 50% of the farmers using auto guidance, which was unbelievable to me. I'm sure by now it's probably 80-some percent, and that was a shocker. I didn't figure it was quite that fast. I've always said when it first came out here about 5 years ago or so, I always said that it was going to be adopted really fast. So it's kind of refreshing to see that I was at least right in my conjecture because I knew the type of technology it was and how fast. I kind of assumed it would be adopted very quickly, and it is.
Well, I like the fact that you guys called it duh technology. Like, well, of course, this just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think of duh technologies. A lot of times I like to say thinking about the big and small farm again issue, larger farms adopt technologies because they think they're going to make more money with them. The small farms adopt them just to survive because you have to, because everybody else is doing it and they're running up cash rents and you got to do it just to survive. It's a lot different in mentality, and we often say small farmers find themselves going broke in the face of rents that they perceive are too high. They pay the rent, but they probably can't afford the technology, and then they don't make as much money. And I mean, that's just kind of the cold, hard facts. Obviously, it's good manager still matters more than size by far, but at least that's the underlying trend with size, is that the bigger farmers make more money.
Of course, I think the comment was made that, let's say you adopt some new technology and save $3 an acre. Well, guess what? Your cash rent's going to go up $3.
That's exactly right, and that's why they're duh technologies. When many of you think a technology is going to be quickly adopted, you just do it because you're going to have to do it just to survive. You're not going to make a bunch of money from it because it's going to be bid into land values and rents very quickly. So what you want to focus on is the slower technologies or the slower aspects of technologies where you can use your brain power to actually develop an edge over your neighbors that lasts for years and sometimes decades because of the way you do things. That's where the real money's made.
Well, and early on you gave an example that fascinated me was the period of time it really took to convert from a horse and mule farming operation to just tractors. That wasn't the fastest adoption. People might be a little surprised by that.
No, I always like to use that as an example because it was about a 40-year deal. But the interesting aspect is that tractors and horses were working side by side during that time period everywhere in the U.S. It wasn't like some people were stupid and some people were smart and figured it out more quickly. No, it was not that clear. People would argue about their team of horses being just as good as the tractors that first were coming out. They would argue about these things every day, much like they still do today on no-till farming versus more conventional tillage operations. Now, there's some areas where it's more obvious, but still, overall, it's not that obvious yet, and people continue to argue over those things. And so you develop a small edge and move in one direction or the other, and then the edge will last quite a while because it's not that obvious to everyone.
Anything you would point to right now as like the sort of newest and most current technology that farmers should be looking at?
Well, I would certainly say the telematics, which was kind of the topic of our talk. Certain aspects of telematics, the knowing what your machines are doing, knowing how full the grain carts are, knowing how full combines are. I can't believe we don't have these things already, but they're about to be available to everybody. So I think anything that's done with real time, so you can see the screen of another tractor from your computer or from your tractor if you're running one and somebody else is running the other one, so you can actually see what each other sees. That is going to be a real technology. Even though we're not quite there yet, it'll be out in the next couple of years. It'll be fast.
So since you are back in the farmer side of things here, what has been maybe most useful to you of late that has been a technology that kind of back when you started you may not even have dreamed of?
Well, I think the most quickly useful would have been like the boom and section control and shut off of row units on planters, because we farm a lot of odd-shaped fields, and they have a lot of benefits. That was probably the biggest quick payback. The more interesting thing we've done is we've used variable rate application on our farm. Every acre is done differently, and we base it on crop removal of nitrogen and phosphate from the previous crop. Most people don't do that yet. That's been a very interesting thing. We've done that for about 5 years, think it has paybacks. And so I think I find it the most maybe interesting to do it as an ag economist. The other one's probably the quickest rate of return, though, was the boom and section shutoff.
I heard you mention some gopher holes there in your talk too, and I, after having been doing some pheasant hunting finally in my life, that can, you know, some of them seem like they're big enough they could swallow a small tractor. But
yeah, they're actually badger holes.
And
they are big, and they do kind of jump you around a little bit. And so yeah, we've got some weird things like that that you deal with that you slow down for. And we have kind of washouts and stuff. Even though we're 100% no-till in our operation, you do have things you deal with, obstacles in the field. And you have power lines you go around. You have maybe oil well pumping units, and maybe windmills in some cases that people are now farming around. These are all things that kind of complicate it and make it interesting to have the machinery that keeps you from running into those things. I mean, that has some benefits.
Well, thank you very much, Terry, for visiting with me here. Great presentation here, which was, of course, sponsored by John Deere, our sponsor for our coverage on precisionpays.com. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.